News Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another Sunday here on Hometown Heroes, coming to you each and every Sunday afternoon on News Talk 580 KMJ and KMJ580.com. I have to apologize. Last week, it was such a great story from Jim Heitkotter, and I tried to squeeze it into one program, and I shouldn't have tried to do that because there was just too much ground to cover. So we're going to cover the rest of that ground today. Sorry to make you wait a week to hear the ending of this story, but you're going to hear it from Jim Heitkotter here. And when we left off last week, just to fill in, if you're listening for the first time to his story here today, he was a P-38 pilot in China on his 19th mission. He was coming home only to find out that his wingtip fuel tanks were empty on that P-38. He ended up running out of fuel, had to bail out of the airplane. In doing so, caught his leg on the tail, almost pulled his leg completely off, but a very severe wound. When he got to the ground, he ripped up part of his parachute, wrapped his leg to stop the bleeding, was rescued by some Chinese natives who took him to German missionaries as they started to nurse him back to health. So that's where we're going to pick up the story. I know that's a lot to try to digest quickly, but let's pick it up with Jim Heitkotter there. So Jim, the Chinese have brought you to these German missionaries. This whole time, you're trying to stay awake. You're trying to deal with this intense pain, which is probably like nothing you've ever felt before. And I imagine you're just overwhelmed by the treatment that you got from the Chinese people and this German missionary and his wife.
There's no doubt about that. The Chinese were very, very helpful. I had a pointy talkie. You know what a pointy talkie is?
That's how you communicate without words, I guess, huh?
Well, it is words. Actually, a little booklet that each of us had that had comparative phrases in Chinese and English opposite each other. So if you read your English, you pointed opposite to the Chinese. And in this case, I was fortunate in one of the Chinese that was there could read the Chinese language. And then he would point to a Chinese answer, and I'd read the answer in English. So that's where the pointy talkie came from. Very useful little booklet.
Good thing that was in your parachute backpack too, huh?
Right, right.
Or did you have that actually on you before that?
Well, I had it available. I think it was in the backpack, the survival stuff.
So that's how you communicated with them.
Right.
And I imagine this wasn't heal up in a couple of days and you're fine to get out of here. This is going to take some time for you to get back to health.
No. I was there for a good 4 or 5 days before I began to really come around and talk much. And I was in good enough shape to give the dimensions for that a light airplane would need to land on the river bank. And he asked me, the missionary did, Mr. Patel, what the specifications had to be. So he got his 150 schoolboys out and they rolled boulders and pulled snags and leveled off the river bank, so that they had an L-5B airstrip.
Okay, now this is crazy. That's the only... I want to make it clear to our listeners here. That's the only way you're going to get out of there, right?
Right.
The only way you're getting out of there is if a plane can come in and pick you up.
I'll tell you why I couldn't get out of there. There was the doctor that eventually got to me and the engineering officer, the two of them, followed rumor and had to walk 90 miles through the mountains and some very high mountains to get to me, and it took them 5 days to do that. So I was in no shape to be carried out. Certainly not, wouldn't walk for several weeks.
So if they can't get a plane in there, who knows what's going to happen to you. I mean, they were taking pretty good care of you, but I imagine they didn't have...
probably have been floated down the river for several days, which would have been a hazardous journey, I suppose.
Worked for Moses, but you don't want to test the theory.
No. So we were in friendly territory, so
right.
that we could have gone down the river, even gotten to that base at Muncie, where we would have been able to fly out. But I was probably in too bad a shape. I was pretty serious at the time.
I imagine by this point, you've entertained the thought once or twice that you might not be coming home to Fresno.
Didn't think about it.
Never thought that that could
I
be
did
it for
too.
You?
I was thinking about parents being notified missing in action. Or,
mm-hmm.
And they were notified missing in action before I was rescued.
So I imagine as you're dealing with this pain, you're probably lying awake at night looking up at the Chinese starry sky and saying, is this it? Am I ever going to get out of here?
Let me tell you another thing. The missionaries had a regular school, and I don't know what all they taught, but they did have a choir group of small kids all the way through to adults, all in the same choir. In the evenings, they would rehearse and sing. They were singing Stephen Foster songs.
Huh. That gives you a taste of back home.
Oh, yeah. Boy, I was homesick when I heard that.
And I can tell it's still a powerful emotion for you here today. So somewhere, someone gets the idea. We've got 150 school kids here who can sing Stephen Foster songs. Maybe they can build an airstrip, too. I don't know if that would be the first thing that popped into my mind. But whose idea was that?
No, that was the missionary asking for dimensions. He figured he had the facility to do that, but it was all hand done. They got it made, and rescue planes came out, circled the place, and then disappeared upriver. And another day, he did the same, circled the place, and had a big tin roof, you know, could have been seen, and went downriver. But the third day, old Ralph Wire, the commander of the squadron, came buzzing in a P-38, buzzed the place, pulled up and dropped a message. He says, we'll be in tomorrow with the L-5, which they did. They came in and hauled me out.
I bet just the suspense of seeing that message drop or hearing about it and waiting to see what it said had to be very intense for you.
Yeah, I wasn't in on that, but
But you did get the message. They're coming for you tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. I can hear the airplanes.
And I'm still amazed that these 150 school kids were able to create an airfield that somebody could land on.
In a matter of a couple, 3 days.
That's incredible. I think those missionaries were doing a little praying through those
days. When they took me out, the Mosier, the pilot.
This is the pilot of the L-5D, the ambulance plane?
Yeah, the B model of the
L-5B,
L-5.
Okay.
It was a Stinson airplane.
Mm-hmm.
The B model had a stretcher in the fuselage with a long side door. That's where I was able to lie down. He started on, in departure, as soon as he could, he lifted one wheel and rolled on one wheel until he was airborne. And when he landed at Kunming, he did the same thing. Landed on one wheel and went until he lost lift on that wing, and it dropped down and rolled a short way on both. And so I told him that I'd like to do that too, just to keep my skills sharp. And he says, I didn't want to tell you. He says, when I landed up there, I hit a rock and I broke a wheel. And so he has some repairs to do on his airplane. His tail wheel and his landing gear wheel have broken, and he didn't have any spares and nothing. But he told me he had read a comic strip as a kid where the pilot had done the same thing and he couldn't fix his tire, so he filled it with wet sand.
So the comic strip came in handy.
That did it. Yeah, we got out with the tire full of wet sand.
Well, and one of the things that you have is his account of that day, January 19th, 1945, and what he did in coming to pick you up. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a little commercial break here. We're going to come back and finish this story, get the rest of the tale of the rescue of Jim Heitkotter and the rest of his time in the service and even some aerial adventures since then. Filling a lot of time with Jim Heitkotter the last couple weeks with his incredible tales from World War II. We'll be right back with more Hometown Heroes here on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Tell us about your hometown hero. Email your story by clicking on the Hometown Heroes link at KMJ580.com. On the front line of freedom, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. We've been talking to Jim Heitkotter since last week. B-38 pilot from here in Fresno has a really incredible story and couldn't fit it in one program, so we continued it to this week. We picked up today with his being rescued from the German missionary camp in China during World War II. He had bailed out of his P-38, rescued by Chinese natives. The Chinese school children created an impromptu airstrip that an L-5B ambulance plane could come in and pick him up on. And that is indeed what happened in January of 1945. And this pilot, Dewey Mosier, hadn't told you, didn't want to make you nervous, hadn't told you that he had a flat tire that he had to fix with wet sand. But that's what he had to do. When you were actually airborne, had taken off from where you'd been with the German missionaries, was that a moment of relief for you, or did that relief not come till you were back at a hospital?
Oh, I didn't think of it in those terms, I guess. I knew I was glad to be getting to a hospital. I was sad to leave the missionaries.
Well, they had saved your life. As you said.
They were family.
Well, and I'm going to give Jim a break for just a second, and I'm going to read to you from something that Jim has, courtesy of the pilot who came and picked him up in January of 1945. This was written by the late Dewey Mosier. He says, "As for me, I almost failed the mission, reaching the makeshift landing strip, which had been hurriedly prepared by 150 children from the mission school. Sergeant Harper, a 19th Liaison Squadron fellow pilot, and his passenger, Major Greenwood, also of the 19th, landed first. When they had cleared the strip, I came in with the L-5B ambulance plane. The touchdown was smooth and all was going smoothly when suddenly there was a hard bump and a loud explosion. The left wing dropped, the tail dragged, and the plane came to a jolting stop. I shut off the engine and got out to see what happened." And you didn't hear any of that. You weren't aware of any of that, right?
No, we were quite a ways from the airstrip.
So this is all news to you. And Mosier continues, "The left wheel had struck an unseen rock. Part of the wheel had broken away, puncturing the tire and causing it to go flat in seconds. The jolt caused the tail wheel assembly to collapse, allowing the tail section of the plane to drag in the dirt. The flat tire, the broken tail wheel, and the dragging tail section combined were responsible for our sudden stop. Helped by the Chinese who were waiting for our arrival, we turned the plane around. I started the engine and literally forced the plane back to the end of the strip so the other L-5 could take off if necessary. I walked away from the plane and sat down alone. Prior to becoming a pilot, I'd graduated from the Air Corps Aircraft Mechanics School, completed several specialist courses, and become an instructor. That background taught me to carry some small hand tools, and I'd transfer them to this borrowed plane. In addition, a tie-down kit consisting of three heavy wire corkscrews and ropes was still in the L-5B. With these tools and a wild idea, I set to the task of mending the broken parts. I couldn't have done it alone. The missionary's wife, whom I now know as Mrs. Prettle, spoke German, Chinese, and English, and she became my interpreter/foreman in organizing the group of mission people who furnished the muscle needed to lift the plane and prop it up so I could work on it. My first problem was the broken wheel and flat tire. The wheel consisted of two halves held together by bolts. The two halves together formed the rim on which the tire was mounted and could be unbolted to remove or install the tire and tube. With the wheel removed and the halves parted, the tire was removed. Now the problem was how to repair the tire or make it serviceable with no tire repair materials or extra tubes available. I decided to try filling the tire with tightly packed wet sand, which, when the wheel was reassembled and the plane lowered, would support the plane's weight. We tried it, and it worked. And as you said, Jim, that was an idea he got from a comic book.
Yes.
I guess comic books are good for something. You wouldn't be here without them, I suppose. So he continues. I'll read just a little bit more of Mr. Mosier's account. In later years, when the subject came up, people would ask how I thought of filling the tire with wet sand. The answer was very simple. In those days, there was a very popular comic strip called Smilin' Jack about pilots and aviations. I read it religiously. The idea of wet sand in place of compressed air was an emergency remedy for a flat tire and was included in one of the Smilin' Jack comic strips. I never forgot it, although I only used it one time. And boy, are you thankful that he used it that one time. You have Smilin' Jack to thank for that as well. So they get you out of there. They get you back to the hospital. What happens from there? And at this point, are you starting to think, you know what, everything's going to be okay?
Oh, yeah. By then, I was in the hospital at Kunming for a short time and then taken over to India, Calcutta, where grafting and other work was done, and just sit around for a long time recuperating.
This is some pretty major surgery they're doing on your leg.
Well, yeah, it still shows. The trip back to the States, leaving Calcutta, was really uneventful. Getting back to the United States, it was very uneventful. It landed just 1 year to the day that I left Miami Airport. Huh. And all of the time in China, what I wanted most was a nice big chocolate milkshake and a green salad. And so, and I walked through the coffee shop in the Floridian Hotel, which I was forced to enjoy. I could see where so many of the other guys that had come back were down there having a chocolate shake and a salad. And just seeing the fact that I could have it whenever I wanted now was satisfied my hunger for it. And that was great. And then I was able to get around town. I traded my crutches to a little guy who couldn't find small crutches, and I traded him for his cane. I used the cane to walk around town, enjoying the views, girls in shorts, stores that were fully stocked, and girls well stacked and in shorts. And
hadn't seen any of that for quite some time. And I imagine
not at all.
You probably haven't tasted a chocolate milkshake quite that good since.
No.
Do you remember what it was like when you saw your folks for the first time, when you got back?
When
you came home and the first time that you saw your parents again?
Oh, it was quite a while before I got back home, and they wouldn't talk about their receiving the notice of missing in action much. That we just didn't discuss much of anything, you know. That was all, and the bad part was over. Now let's go. Go get ahead.
And you've been gone for quite some time, and you have the Purple Heart to remind you of all of this. I'm curious. I know the answer to part of this, but all those people that played a hand in saving your life and you being here today, from the Chinese school children, the people who had brought you down from the hill to the missionary camp, the German missionaries themselves, the pilot, Dewey Mosier, who came and picked you up. How long was it until you had any contact with them, were you ever able to talk to them again, to thank them, to let them know that you made it and you were okay?
No, the missionaries, I tried to get in touch through the central headquarters, missionary headquarters in Munich, and to no avail. They were off in the boonies, and there was little or no mail delivery that I knew of, so there was no contact with them. The engineering officer who walked the 90 miles to get to me, I got together with many years later when I discovered his name. He had joined the 14th Air Force Association, and we met at one of the conventions and had good meetings and times from then on. But the doctor, although there was an office with his name still on it, he was gone. I couldn't find him. He wasn't even in the registry of doctors anymore, so I never got in touch with him.
And how about the pilot, Dewey Mosier?
Mosier turned up at a convention, too. He had written to the Veterans Administration asking for my address. He had been trying for 50 years to find me.
And I imagine you thought about him.
Yeah, the Veterans Administration wouldn't give any names or addresses out, but they did forward his letter to me, and we got together that way. So at the upcoming convention of the 14th Air Force Association in Reno, we got together.
Did you even have to say anything, or did a handshake kind of say it all?
Just a handshake and see ya. No, it was glorious, really.
You ever stop to think about how ridiculous this whole thing is, what the odds are that all these things could line up for you to still be here, for you to survive all of that? Because you needed a lot of help along the way to get there. How do you account for all that? Why do you think you were able to come home?
Well, some of us did. That's all. I was just part of it. Part of a whole bunch of guys. And it's a shame that it seems to me that the history of the wars is not brought out much in the schools, because the kids don't know anything about any of the wars, even Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, that's why this program is here, that we hope that we'll not only honor your service, the people like you, but preserve some of your stories and hopefully educate and inspire people like me who weren't alive during World War II, so we can try to live up to that legacy. I know that flying's been in your blood ever since, that during your days as a shop teacher at Roosevelt High School, you got the idea of Bert Rattan from Dinuba had designed the Very Easy, an airplane you can build yourself, and with the help of your shop students, you built that. You flew it for a dozen years. I know that was a big thrill for you. But as we close out our visit with you here, is there anything that you want to share with our listeners along those lines of what you just said, that people don't understand the history, that they maybe don't understand the significance? What's the number one thing? You think about your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchild now. What do you want them to know about what you and people like you did more than 60 years ago?
Oh, boy.
I know you could fill a book with it, but
yeah,
if you could put it in a nutshell, what would it sound
like?
Yeah,
yeah. Well, I can't even put it in a nutshell. Like I say, the kids should be more aware of what it took to keep them where they are. And people have even forgotten the Twin Towers in the, what,
eight 7 years ago.
Seven, yeah. 8 years ago. And, well, I forgot how long ago. But, it just isn't meaningful to so many people that so many other people had done the very most, sacrificed their lives to keep this country in shape and free.
Amen to that. More than 400,000 Americans made the ultimate sacrifice in World War II. Jim Heitkotter came pretty close to doing that himself, but we're glad that he was here to share that story with us today. Jim, thank you for serving our country. Thank you for the burden that you still bear every time you walk down the street. And thank you for sharing some of those stories with us.
And I thank you for making these legacies live again.
Well, there's a lot more of them to come, and we'll have another one as we continue the program. We've got the rest of Hometown Heroes today. You can join us each and every Sunday. And it's been a great pleasure being with Jim Heitkotter here, Hometown Heroes, on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Now, more Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. What a pleasure it was to hear the story of Jim Heitkotter and his adventures in his B-38, particularly that incredible story of survival and getting out of that Chinese forest after having to bail out of his B-38. Remember, you can access any of our programs online at kmj580.com. And if there's a veteran in your life you'd like to tell me about, paul@kmj580.com is the email address. And while you're online, here's another website you can check out, honorflight.org. We're going to spend the rest of this program talking about the Honor Flight Network. Some of you may have heard of it. Some of you have heard that there's a program that flies World War II veterans to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., and they do so at absolutely no cost to the veterans. Sounds too good to be true, I know, but it is true, and we're going to hear all about it now from the founder and president of the Honor Flight Network, Earl Morse, joining us from Ohio today. Earl, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Paul. Thank you so much for having me on the air.
Oh, thanks for being with us, and thank you for what you're doing for veterans all across this country. Let's talk a little bit, first of all, about what the Honor Flight Network is and how it got started. Obviously, it's no older than the World War II Memorial is, so this is a fairly new program, but it seems to me like it's mushroomed and expanded pretty quickly here for you.
Well, yeah, that's one way of putting it. We like to say that the program has actually exploded. We got our start in May of 2005 here in the Springfield, Ohio area. At the time, I was a physician assistant, having the honor and privilege of caring for America's veterans here in Springfield, Ohio. And sadly, here we were about 3, then 6, then 9 months after the World War II Memorial was dedicated. I was seeing approximately 300 World War II veterans in that clinic there, and not one of them had been out to see their memorial. And the worst part was that reality had set in. When I would ask the veterans, I said, you haven't been to see your memorial? Well, why not? And they'd always say, well, you know, the kids, they've been real busy, and Ma, she's been kind of sick, and we don't have the money. Well, I'm very fortunate in that I'm also a private pilot and a retired Air Force captain, a member of one of the largest aero clubs in the nation out here at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. So we started renting planes, paying for them out of pocket to have the honor and privilege of taking these incredible men and women, flying them out personally to Washington, D.C. to visit their memorials. We took to the skies in May of 2005. We took off in 6 planes. We flew 12 veterans. And then the next month, 8 planes, 16 veterans. The third month, 10 planes. We flew 20 veterans, and I was so proud of our effort. I went to my mom, who's been with me from the get-go, helping out. I said, Mom, we're flying 20 World War II veterans every month. Can you believe that? And she said, but son, we're getting 95 applications a month. So confronted with that major math problem there, we started looking at the commercial carriers like Southwest and AirTran and seeing how much it was going to cost us to buy up seats on those commercial carriers, and we started doing that. There is a wonderful gentleman down in Hendersonville, North Carolina. His name is Jeff Miller, and he saw what we were doing, and he said he'd like to start something like that out of Hendersonville. And I told him how to go about doing that. You know, you need a commercial carrier with direct nonstop service. And he said, we don't have that available, so we're thinking about chartering an aircraft. I said, how much is that going to cost? He said, oh, about $78,000, and I said, good luck with that, Jeff. You know, I said, this is how you do it. You know, this is the paperwork and the forms, and these are timelines and agendas that make it happen. These are the bus companies that we use, and this is how we feed the veterans. And lo and behold, he got the community behind him, and they actually ended up chartering 6 aircraft over the span of 2 years. So what really warms my heart, Paul, is that we thought out here in Ohio that we were the people that had the biggest heart for these World War II veterans. But I'll tell you what, I am finding out that all across this great nation of ours, there are citizens everywhere that do not take for granted the liberties and the blessings and the freedoms that we all enjoy. And they want to see those veterans that secured those liberties that we all enjoy finally get to see their memorial. So, now we're in 34 states all across the country. We have over 75 hubs, and, man, we are targeting California.